Welcome into K-State Online. I am Mason Voth. That is Drew Galloway here on Monday, July 28th. But it is no regular Monday because it feels a lot more like football season today because we got to hear Chris Klieman speak for the first time officially in this 2025 season. It was his first K-State press conference of the year as K-State opened up fall camp. Really, you know, they're just their practices that started last week. I know some people really hate the term fall camp since it is July. We're nowhere close to fall. I'll ask you this, Drew. Do you respect like the official start of seasons, or do you have your own definition for what fall, winter, spring, and summer is?
I've always called it fall camp, but like Kellis and DY both are more of like a training camp type of people.
That's an NFL thing to me, though. You can't, if you call it training camp, I think it's weird. Like, you know,
that's
Mr. Dorkwitz is doing in Columbia.
I consider this more like fall camp because it's not even that it's like, oh, it's fall outside. I consider this like fall is coming.
Should we start calling it summer school? Is that more of an appropriate college football term?
You might be onto something there. Summer school.
Yeah. Might just be the way to go on it. I view it this way. You know what they say, the winter doesn't really start until like mid-December or something. It's like, that's baloney. Winter starts December 1 and it runs until March 1. And then from March 1st until through May 31st. May 31st, that would be spring. And then June all the way through August is summer to me. And while you will still get summer conditions in September is a fall month. So September, October, November, that's fall. That's how it should be. None of this, oh, we're going based off of, you know, the solstice and dumb crap like that, you know, get science out of my seasons.
I'm with you. I might want a little bit more spring. Like that feels like a very short spring to you.
But I mean, you're sitting around on June 7th and thinking, yeah, this feels like spring outside.
No,
when it's...
no, I would start at like mid-February.
No, if you still got a two in the month, that is definitely wintertime. I can't get on board with that. You mid-February. I mean, heck, even sometimes the end of March, you're still getting snow. I remember it would have been my sophomore year of high school. They had to do a bunch of projects and renovations that summer. So we ended school, I think, on the last day of March, and it snowed on the last day of school that year. So yeah, you're going to get some outliers occasionally,
yeah.
But you know, February, you can't start grouping spring into that, but that's just a personal preference. It bothers me when people go the official route. It's like, you really believe on, you know, September 25th that it's still summer? I don't even know. And I guess that would actually officially be probably fall at that point. Is it 21st, 22nd?
Yeah, the 21st, I think.
Yeah. Anyways, that's just, you know, there are those dates that come up from time to time. Like, you're full of it. That doesn't count. Anyways, let's get into the important stuff today. And the first thing that's truly important is Chris Klieman gave an update on the status of George Fitzpatrick, who obviously just a few weeks ago had a medical episode and has been recovering. And Chris Klieman says he's actually been back in the facility since then.
I had heard he had a medical incident last week of the summer. He's doing much better. He's back in Manhattan. He's been to the facility a handful of times. And really, guys, it's just a day-by-day basis with George. We don't really have a timetable, but he's doing a lot better. So I don't have a lot of other information that I'm able to share on that other than he's doing well and back in Manhattan.
So there's the update on him, which then leads into a pretty lengthy answer because there's a lot of options there and a lot of things to sort through what Chris Klieman had to say about the offensive line for K-State and how that looks after George Fitzpatrick's status is now up in the air. And he said kind of a day-to-day thing and couldn't give a real timetable on it, which makes a lot of sense.
While at different times where John Pastore, getting him back, John was going to probably play 50 snaps a game last year until he had got injured in fall camp. And so he's playing left tackle right now. Terrence Enos is playing right tackle. Liney's playing right and left tackle. Gus Hawkins is playing some right tackle. Drake Beckwith's playing left tackle. So we have some guys there that are providing some depth. J.B. Nelson playing guard helps Liney be able to be pushed out to some different spots. But I think the health of Pastore is what has us really excited about when George gets back, and George will be back. But when he gets back, boy, we've got some other guys that all along we're hoping a guy doesn't have to play 65 plays a game. And we can split some of those snaps up. So it's we're down in general with our depth in the offensive line in totality and numbers, but that goes back to the house settlement and cutting a bunch of guys and not having as many guys come in. That's the reality of it, and that's an area that's taken a hit. But I like the veteran people we have up front right now.
Another position of, I don't want to say wealth, but you've got a lot of depth at defensive end. How's that position?
On everything that Chris Kleiman had to say about the offensive line and how things are kind of shaking out there. Now that we get a little bit of a picture from Chris Kleiman and kind of the update on, you know, Fitzpatrick, whenever that might be, and some of the guys kind of stepping up, what do you think from left tackle to right tackle the starting five looks like in Ireland now? Because it seems like now John Pastore is the lock to start at left tackle.
Right now, if you're telling me right now who is going to be that starting five, I'd go John Pastore at left tackle, probably still Taylor Potier at left guard, Sam Hecht center. Right guard, after hearing Chris Kleiman speak, we kind of thought that Andrew Lyngang would be right guard with J.B. Nelson at right tackle, but it actually might be flipped around and J.B. Nelson at right guard with Andrew Lyngang at right tackle. And you still have a lot of depth at guard and tackle going forward with those guys. But you really look at it as, okay, you had the Fitzpatrick stuff happen, and, you know, we talked about, like, the first thing that you want to do is hope that he gets better, but then, like, there's a football aspect to it. And Chris Kleiman, total pro, doesn't even let that question even be asked about Fitzpatrick and addresses it in his opening statement. And the hope is still that you would have Fitzpatrick play at some point this year. But also it's good to hear that there's still kind of that positive momentum along the offensive line. And really, the John Pastore praise isn't necessarily new. And I pointed it out in the notebook, just talking about a lot of the highlights from the Kleiman presser. It's not really a new thing. That was somebody that we really highlighted at Big 12 Media Days, of, like, Chris Kleiman went out of his way to praise John Pastore multiple times while we were in Frisco. So it shouldn't be a total surprise that he was one of the first people mentioned today.
Yeah, and he also mentioned Terrence Enos in there, who, you know, I think when you bring in a transfer like that, you think, okay, he's going to factor into this equation at some point. But today maybe made it seem a little bit more significant. And, you know, you mentioned in your notebook also how he kind of threw Gus Hawkins into the mix a little bit and getting some opportunities there. And we just talked last week, you know, talking hypotheticals, you know, Gus Hawkins was one of those guys that you think if you can get him to reach pretty close to his potential this season, he's one of the top guys that I think you would take on this team, and even more so now with the George Fitzpatrick situation. So where do you think that's game one? Where do you think things sit when we get to game eight, obviously barring injury? And let's just, for the sake of what we're discussing, not try to assume when George Fitzpatrick might be back. So you go from the game one guys to game eight, where do you think it sits for K-State?
Game eight, I'd imagine you have pretty much the same guys, but you're probably seeing a little bit more Amos Talalay. You might see some Gus Hawkins in there. You might see some Terrence Enos in there. Like, I think that you're going to see a lot of a similarity, as you would hope, like, barring no injuries from game one all the way down. I think you're just going to see more guys kind of come in and have a lot more of a rotation, but that still be the primary five? Because I think that that's something that you really have to find along an offensive line at any point is you have to have guys that can come in and spell your guys, but you also have to have a five that are very comfortable playing with each other, because it's a one real position where you can only do so much by yourself, because you have the five guys that all kind of work together as the unit along the offensive line. And that's why I think that it's important to have guys that will play probably 80% of the snaps. We still need to implement those guys for the extra 20 that are like the depth pieces.
Do you want to try to assess overall like snap percentages to those first five guys right now to kind of give a clearer picture here? Because that's what I'm trying to get out. I want to try and pick your brain and see where you think that guys are going to be. And then at the end of the year where, you know, you think things could end up for the people watching. Listen, I mean, here's what we do know. Is that as long as Sam Hecht is healthy, he's going to take 100% of the snaps. That's about the number one thing that we have to go off of. Outside of that, I mean, it kind of seems like they're going to try and find a way, as long as he's healthy, that Pastore is probably number two in terms of percentage of snaps. Obviously, past Fitzpatrick. I mean, I think Fitzpatrick was going to be the lockdown number two on this list had he not had the medical situation. So from there, your other four guys that you mentioned as day one starters, Pastore, Poitier, Nelson, and Line Gang, where would you go with it?
Yeah, I'd say for Pastore, again, some of it is just like how important is your position along the offensive line too. And like left tackle, you probably want the same left tackle for 80 to 85% of the snaps.
Yeah, you want Avery to be able to yell at the same guy over and over again when he gets hit.
Yes. So with that, you probably want 80 to 85%. Interior offensive line, I think, is interesting because they do so much in the run game to help everything move forward. And like that, again, I think that's one of the reasons that KC really struggled to run the ball at times last year, was that the interior just wasn't good enough. So you probably want those guys closer to like 65, maybe 70% of the snaps for your day one starters. Going down the line. And then right tackle, I think that you can get away with like 70 to 75% of snaps. But like, again, you still want your number ones out there for a majority. But, you know, there can be a drive where, okay, like Taylor Poitier like needs a rest, for example. You can have somebody else come in and fill in the gaps.
Well, and
I think that's just important.
And we've seen how K-State's seasons have played out in recent years. If you go and look last year, and I know this has been something people have been critical of Chris Klieman and his staff about at various times, is why is so-and-so still in the game right now? You're going to have an opportunity in week one against North Dakota where you can rotate pretty early and often. Army, you would like to think that at some point in there, you're going to have a two-possession lead in the first half. At that point, I think that would be the way that I would look at it. And again, I am an amateur when it comes to this. And as I've stated many times before, I think the one position that the average person knows the least about is offensive line. So everybody take what I'm saying with a grain of salt, and I could be totally stupid. You know, like Connor Riley or Brian Lepak could hear this and they could go, this guy's a dumbass. But how I would view things, if you're really trying to rotate guys and out, you want to try and keep dudes fresh. I would say that every time, and it has to be in the context of the situation. Like, you're not going to do this if you go up 10-0 against Alabama in the Sugar Bowl, you're not like, hey, you know what? We're going to play around. We're going to send the twos in there a little bit, try to keep guys fresh. You're not going to do it against, you know, that road game at Baylor, which is going to be, you know, one of the more critical games. Iowa State, one of those where, you know, if it's early, like the cushion, but in a lot of games, you'll know the situation where you get to about a 14-point lead at any point. Okay, let's try and mix some other guys in right now on this next possession. Okay, let's, you know, second half, we're up by three scores. We can be a little bit more lenient here. I think you have to have situations where you kind of almost hold yourself to it, you know, like almost like a bullpen game for a manager where, you know, you're going to map out before you go in there. Okay, well, we're looking here. The first two innings go to this guy. Inning number three, we want it to go here. We've got a guy that's going to kind of bridge the gap. He's going to take the next three, and then we'll just manage the rest of the game how it needs to over 7, 8, and 9. And I think that's how the offensive line situation could be for K-State if you are wanting to truly rotate these guys in and out, because we're talking about so many names here that have the potential and are getting positive praise at different moments during this offseason that I think you want to be able to give them that opportunity. So that would be my approach to it. And again, like, I could be totally off base with how I'm viewing it. And I'm also well aware that on offensive line, you need a lot of consistency. That's why we've seen K-State operate the way they have, specifically the last three seasons, where there may have been some weaker links on the offensive line, but they felt more comfortable with those guys. They knew as a unit, those five guys were going to work the best together. You need that because receiver, it's your own position. Quarterback, it's definitely your own position. Running back, it's your own position. But when it comes to the offensive line, you are five dudes trying to play as one, and that's not an easy thing to do. It's trying to mix in how an offensive line should operate with also what Chris Klieman has said is important to K-State.
I think it is that too. And you talk about having like a plan of like when to rotate guys in, and I think that's a good idea. I also think that like something that we didn't see a lot last year, just because I don't think that they had enough guys that they felt comfortable with putting out there, is like, if you can tell the offensive line is struggling, that's also a time that you got to rotate somebody else in. Because I think that there was too many times last year where it kind of felt like they were beating their head against the wall, trying to figure things out, running the ball at times. Where like this year, because you have enough guys that you feel comfortable with, if somebody you can tell out there is either not performing well, or you can tell is just kind of like banged up and that's why they're not playing well, that's another time you got to get somebody else in there. Because I think there were too many points last year. And specifically, like the one game that it's really like coming to my mind for whatever reason is the Arizona State game. It really felt like K-State was trying to beat their head against the wall and be like, okay, at one point we're going to break a run. And it just never really came.
Yeah, if you look at really that two-week stretch, Houston and Arizona State, K-State went out their first drive. It was not raining yet. This was after the initial delay before the start of the game. They come out, they throw the ball a lot. And this is a much bigger topic of discussion. It's more big picture, is that like, I thought Avery Johnson was on a really good path. The trajectory was going up last year when they went to Houston. And I thought the first half, he still did a lot of good things throwing the football, but they had some things go against them because that first drive was really pass heavy and they should have scored a touchdown, but Jace Brown was running on the out of bounds line. And I don't think he realized it. And then, you know, the amount of times you threw it in the second half was ill-advised because of the rain, but you had to because of the running thing. But if you even look there, after the first drive, so K-State's up 3-0, they force a Houston punt. They come out, Dylan Edwards run for a loss of 6, DJ Giddens run for a loss of 1, and then third and 17, they go Avery Johnson 1-yard pass to Dylan Edwards punt. Houston comes out, scores a touchdown. K-State goes back out there, and they go incomplete pass, DJ Giddens run for no gain, Avery Johnson pass, and then a punt. When they come back out, they once again have to just keep chucking the ball because the runs in this game, Giddens for 4 after that, Giddens for 4, Edwards for 12, Edwards for 3, Edwards for 3, Giddens for 1, and then another pass, and then Dylan a run for 3. Like, there were not a ton of big runs in that game, and you're right, they kept handing it off. And then same type of thing when they faced Arizona State, where they come out, and unfortunately, second play of the game, kind of a weird one, is when Avery throws the pick, and then Arizona State scores instantly. But K-State kind of committing to the run. And here's the other thing that you can see in this, is that when you go and look at the play-by-plays of those games, this is first quarter stuff, first couple of drives of the game. It's not DJ Giddens, DJ Giddens, DJ Giddens. It's maybe Giddens, and then Edwards, Edwards, Edwards. That's not a knock on Edwards or Giddens for how they played last year. It's evidence that they were unwilling to make the adjustments on the offensive line, and they thought the only way they could possibly do it was with the running back. And we saw that the year before as well, where there were some games where they had to make the decision, hey, this isn't a DJ Giddens game. This has to be a Trayshawn Ward game. Texas Tech would be one of those games where they couldn't do anything with the standard run. So what do they have to do? They had to go to Avery Johnson at quarterback, and they had to go to Trayshon Ward at running back, and it opened the game up for them. And that's where now, like, you feel like you've got the stable to rotate more on the offensive line. You actually have to be about it, because it's clear now that's what the problem was last year. Yes, DJ Ginns was kind of having some nagging injuries as the season wore on, but DJ Giddens was still a pretty darn good running back last year. We saw what Dylan Edwards was able to do in the Rate Bowl after the offensive line had a month off. Like, it's clear that the problems were the offensive line last year. They just didn't trust the guys behind to come in and replace it. So they had to try and hope that maybe something at running back would happen. And this offense has to operate with a good run game. Like, Avery Johnson is great in play action situations. He is also great with his legs, but it's a lot easier to kind of focus in on Avery Johnson as a runner if you're not worried about K-State ripping off 7-yard run, 15-yard run, 6-yard run with their running backs, and they just weren't doing that effectively enough towards the end of the year. Same thing in the Iowa State game where, you know, Iowa State hadn't had a fantastic time that season. So I think that's one of the more notable things when we talk offensive line is this year you're not going to be probably as likely to just assume we got to change running backs and probably go to the air more, at least in the certain situations. I think K-State should be more of a passing team this year and better at it, but you don't want to have to do that when it's downpouring in Houston, because we've talked about it. K-State threw the ball 40 times in that game. Houston threw the ball 11 times. So,
no, I think that you are right on the money. There's a lot more competition, and I think that's going to breed a lot of better play along the offensive line as well. Because like I said, like if somebody's not performing very well, it's a lot easier this year to say, hey, let's go get somebody else in, because you're a lot more comfortable with those guys. But I mean, to your point also, if like first quarter, the run game was probably at its choppiest down the stretch. I mean, the Iowa State first drive, you have a touchdown, but because it was Dylan Edwards in, who hadn't really been in when K-State had ran the option before, that ends up going from what would have been a touchdown to then a fumble. So I think that there's a lot of give and take, and I think that there was a lot to be learned from last year. And I think that that has been something that has really been brought up a lot by the players, actually, has been just how much they learned from a year ago to right now.
Yeah. Let's hear what Chris Kleiman had to say about Avery Johnson. It was kind of a throw in at the end. This goes back to Chris Kleiman probably feels like he never gets asked questions about his best players. So he got to talk a little bit about what he has seen as improvements for Avery Johnson this year, not just physically.
He's doing a really good job of holding people accountable, holding himself accountable. Never being satisfied. I know we've through practice five and I haven't seen the best of Avery yet. And I think he'd tell you the same thing, which I like. He's hungry. I've got to continue to improve. I got to continue to build that relationship with these other three wideouts, because there may be the guys that are in the game, or these other tight ends, or these other running backs. He's never satisfied. And I really appreciate that about Avery, because a lot of people hold him on a pedestal because he's the in-state kid that has stayed home and all that stuff. You bet. My appreciation for Avery is there's so much more in him, and we haven't all seen it yet. He knows there's more in him, and he's not going to be satisfied. I think there's a couple throws he made today that I know he's kicking himself because he wants it back. And blames himself, not the wideout, not the protection. He puts that on himself, sometimes to a fault, sometimes too much. But I'd rather have that where a kid's taking ownership, and that's what he does, and that's why I love the kid, is he takes ownership.
That's right. Blame your offensive line more, Avery. Come on. Just, you know, put it on those guys. Make it their fault. Good to hear that from Chris Kleiman.
Yeah, I don't think there's any real surprises there. I mean, Avery has always conducted himself in a way where he is not super satisfied with how he played, even when he plays really well. So with that, it's like, you didn't really learn anything. And I know that it sounded like a little bit that he was turning it over at practice today and has a few times, but like, I would rather him really test the limits of, can I make this throw during a practice session than a game, obviously.
I mean, if you're a politician out there, hire Drew Galloway for the spin zone he just gave right there. That's great. I mean, that's great stuff right there.
I remember the year before, or the training camp right before Patrick Mahomes took over, and people were talking about how much he was turning the ball over. It was like, would you rather have him turn it over today or on August 23rd?
All good points. All good points.
And I mean, with the leader stuff, like, that's just what you want from your quarterback.
The thing I take away there is that it's probably good to hear that it sounds like he's maybe being a little bit more vocal.
Yes,
because I think that's the one area where maybe my biggest concern going into year three would be for Avery Johnson is, yeah, there's some of the decision making and convictions on doing stuff on the field. You want the physical things to get better and the mental in-game things. But I do think he's a guy that he will lead by example, but he may not always do it verbally. And I think you would rather have it the way that he has been, where it's, he's going to do everything the right way. He's going to help his guys out. He's going to do all that, but it's taking that next step to where it becomes a more and I talk about conviction a lot with him. I think that's the one thing that his game needs a little bit more of is but Chris Kleiman's saying, to a fault, sometimes he takes too much of the blame on himself. You're a third year quarterback now. If somebody's screwing up on the offensive line, they need to hear it. You know, I don't think any of Peyton Manning's teammates call him, a bleep hole, but he definitely could be at times, but it was warranted in those moments. And I think that's where you need to get. So that would be the thing that I would take away from it, that I go, yeah, that's a positive, is if he's starting to branch out a little bit more there and can maybe give it a little bit more of not just the leading by example, but also leading with his voice.
And he should be the vocal leader. I think that sometimes,
because there have been a lot of quarterbacks in recent years, they love to lead vocally. And then I'm like, I don't know that I'm seeing it with your actual actions. I would rather have it be the way Avery Johnson has been than the way that, unnamed quarterbacks in the past have been.
No, I agree. And I also think that sometimes it is hard because of how college athletics is at this point in time, that it's hard to remember that, last year Avery was still only 19 years old. And there are guys that were 23, 24 on the team. And it's hard to be a leader when you're that much younger than some of the other guys on the team, when everybody has these expectations for you, but you only started at quarterback one game. Now he's been there, done that, been around the block, and now is probably a lot more comfortable being a leader than I would say he was a year ago at this time.
Yeah. Let's take a look at some of the other things Chris Kleiman had to say, like backup quarterback, which is always, quarterback's always important, and then backup quarterback is always talked about because most of the time at K-State, you don't really have to worry about who the starting quarterback is going to be. So surprisingly, Chris Kleiman was willing to just throw Dylan Duff's name into the mix a little bit as the backup, when I think most just kind of were comfortable saying Barnett or Knuth. He said even Dylan Duff has done some things, the true freshman from St. Louis.
It's been positive in the fact that, we didn't practice a whole lot in the spring because of a lot of reasons, but we were only able to do single rep. We're back doing some double rep things, so we've got two fields going of something, whether that's team, whether that's 7-on-7. We're getting a lot of reps, and I think we're splitting those reps really between Blake, between Jacob, and between Dylan Duff. And through 5 days, I see those guys doing some splash things, but who can be the most consistent? That's going to be an ongoing process probably throughout most of fall camp. I don't know if Coach Wells or myself will be ready to name a guy by the end of fall camp or not.
All right, another situation where I'm going to throw it at you to give the painted picture. Avery Johnson, situation like Colorado develops last year, who's entering the game for K-State and Ireland?
If there is a situation, I think that it's like a series parlay Jacob Knuth.
Do you like that if that's the answer?
I think that from what you kind of gather from what Chris Kleiman said about the backup quarterbacks and kind of the general consensus and how I feel, like I have a question of the week that's coming out relatively soon where I dissect the backup quarterbacks. And I kind of said along the same lines of Kleiman, but I said it kind of like more direct. Knuth probably has the highest floor out of the three. He's been in the system the longest, has some game experience, albeit just the two games. That's better than zero. But then I think with that, it's probably the highest floor. But if it's like a play, it's probably still Knuth at the beginning of the year. But I do think at some point, Blake Barnett ends up overtaking Jacob Knuth. I don't know when or kind of how exactly it would transpire. What I would be more curious about is, like, I think that probably close game and it's like a series thing, like kind of like the Colorado situation last year when Taquan Roberson came in. I think that's probably more of Jacob Knuth when he comes in. I think that hopefully it would be week one against North Dakota, but I would imagine that's probably when like a Blake Barnett situation would occur where K-State's up a lot and they go to Barnett over Knuth.
Yeah. Make sure you get the opportunity for him immediately. I already have a suggestion for you for over-unders for week one against North Dakota, over under a half snap for Dylan Duff, because if he's getting praise like that, do you think that they give him the opportunity to at least see the field pretty quick? They got all three quarterbacks into the game last year in week one.
It is fascinating to think about because this isn't the first time that Chris Kleiman has been asked about the backup quarterbacks and Dylan Duff's name has been brought up. And like he's gone out of his way to really shoehorn Dylan Duff into the conversation. And Dylan Duff was probably the recipient of maybe the most praise out of any of the signees from last year at Chris Kleiman's signing day press conference. It's not out of the question that Dylan Duff ends up kind of getting playing time at some point. Like you mentioned the North Dakota game. If he's that close and you kind of know what you have with Jacob Knuth at this point, you might go if the game is out of hand and there's enough for like two series apiece or like a series apiece with two backup quarterbacks, you might go Blake Barnett, Dylan Duff. And I know that probably would be disappointing if you're Jacob Knuth, but I think that he is probably the backup where if like I said, something like happens to Avery during the game, that's who you'd turn to. Yeah. But the other two are like, you got to get their feet wet.
Yeah. Looking at it the last two seasons, and this would kind of be the situation that we would discuss and look at, is K-State in 2023 against SEMO, they gave Avery Johnson three drives and none of the other quarterbacks got any time.
No, that's a little different.
I understand. I'm just, giving some context here. Last year, Avery played obviously a majority of the game and then they came out and, let's see, I think Knuth got the first crack last year.
Yes.
So Knuth came in, led a touchdown drive, and then, Taquan Roberson got, the last crack at it. And it should be noted in there is on a touchdown drive, Knuth only threw the ball one time, but they let Roberson put the ball in the air three times on his one drive. So, that stalled out around midfield. So kind of one of those where, maybe you're trying to get your feet wet, give the experience to a guy in a new situation, which is why I mentioned the Avery Johnson situation against SEMO. Is it wasn't just and a lot of it was this, but it wasn't just hey, you're the guy everybody wants to see, like, let's get you on out there. I do think it was, let's maximize the opportunity, because then, 2 weeks later, they're putting him out there in a close game in Columbia, Missouri. So like
on the first drive.
Yeah. So like they wanted to get him up to speed as quick as possible. I think you'll want to do that with Blake Barnett, because at this point, I think the consensus is if something were to go catastrophically wrong with Avery Johnson this year, Blake Barnett gives you your best chance with the highest team ceiling moving forward.
I would agree.
We'll continue. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, by the way, we talk about like the offensive line rotation last year. UT Martin, they got it out of hand. I would have liked to see the backups come in earlier than they did last year.
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem, is that K-State just the pedal wasn't on the metal hard enough, and they didn't get it to a 35-point game until there were 8 minutes left to play. So, yeah, they need it, and I think they should, because they kill FCS teams. You're going to have already played a week. I think that should be one where, you know, you're hoping by the fourth quarter starting, Avery Johnson shouldn't even think about putting his helmet back on the rest of the night. Dylan Edwards should not think about putting his helmet on the rest of the night. Austin Romaine, guys like that. Offensive heavy with questions for Chris Klieman today, but, defense is, for the most part, pretty well aligned. This is, of course, where we have to talk about Lincoln Cure, and here's what Chris Klieman said.
Well, I think mentally, just like all of our freshmen, you're swimming a little bit because it's a lot of install in a short period of time. Luke Wells tried to get him up to speed as much as he could in the summer, but our summer was a lot shorter than it typically was. So I'm confident that Lincoln throughout fall camp will continue to learn. He's with the biggest veteran group we have in the tight end room, and they all are putting their arm around him and helping him on the mental side of learning what we're doing. You can tell the physical skills are out there. You can tell of a guy that can really run, that can go and catch the football, that can be physical at the point of attack on contact. It's the technique part of it. But, Link's, I think he's 240 pounds. So, I mean, he put on some great weight from the end of track season to where we're at now.
Going into fall.
All right. So what are the takeaways there on what Chris Klieman had to say about Lincoln Cure and what that kind of reads into what his role might be to start the season?
To be honest, nothing about that totally surprised me. We all know how freakish of an athlete he is. We all kind of anticipated that he'd be swimming upstream a little bit, as are a lot of the freshmen that arrived in June. So that's nothing to really worry about or have a red flag about. Biggest takeaway, I think, is that he's already 240 pounds. I mean, that is a weight that he is playable at. And I mean, I would anticipate that he sees some snaps come his way, potentially in Ireland. And I'm kind of coming around to, even with how crowded the tight end room is, he is too athletic, too big, can do too many things, cause a mismatch, to not play at least a handful of snaps every game. I mean, Avery Johnson didn't redshirt in a year where Will Howard just won the Big 12 as the quarterback. They can find a way to get Lincoln Cure on the field.
Yeah, it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen pretty early, and it's just about at what point in the season is the decision made in terms of, like, what role are we going to give him? Because he's not going to redshirt this year. I think that's clear and obvious. But is it, we're trying to, get him involved a couple times a game, or is it, okay, he's so good, we got to make him a mainstay on the offense? Last thing on Chris Klieman today, he talked about the receivers and some of the things that are going on there outside of the perceived top three of Jace Brown and Jaron Bradley and Jerron Tibbs.
Thomas Moise has done a really good job. Jamyre Davis has done a really good job. Isaac Cook has been a great special teams player for us and is trying to get in that mix of that five or six and has done some really good things. Sterling Lockett, we've got to keep pushing Sterling so that we can use Jace outside and inside, and Sterling can play the slot because Sterling's done a good job. We're trying to move more guys around, which sometimes will stunt their growth from a mental standpoint of having to learn multiple positions, but we probably need to do that so that if the fourth best guy is only playing one position and somebody else gets hurt, we got to be able to move him back in or move him to a different position to get the best players on the field. That has helped us there. A guy that jumps out at me that is a skill kid that's playing some wide receiver, he's a running back for us, is Devon Rice. Devon Rice flashes right now, fast, explosive kid that was injured some in spring, didn't get a great chance, had one really good kick return last year against Colorado, but was just trying to find his way. He's an explosive guy that's playing with a lot of confidence, which helps us a bunch to have that other person with Dylan of the same skill set that we could put them both in the backfield or put them both out as wide receiver or in the return game.
Anything earth-shattering that you hear there from Chris Kleiman on the receiver situation?
I think that it's looking likely that J.D. Davis is probably that number four wide receiver. Not a total shock from just what we've heard since he's been on campus, but he was kind of a guy that was an afterthought in last year's recruiting class, kind of along the same line.
Oh no, we've got a frozen Drew. He probably forgot to divert all of his internet resources to his computer again today. Here's what we'll close out with and say. There are some secondary thoughts that Chris Kleiman gave. We'll get into those a little bit more probably tomorrow, discuss a little bit deeper into that. We've got a lot of stuff coming up to close out kind of the thoughts to open up the first week of camp for K-State. We'll get into that as things end up moving forward, and we'll do all that. I would also throw out there, and I would mention this with Drew if he was still here, it sounds like maybe a guy like Adonis Moyes, we heard his name get thrown out a couple of different times at media day. That's a guy that might be in the mix that I start to wonder about, like, how much Caleb Medford do you actually see? Would you just rather try and see if Adonis Moyes can fit that bill instead? So a lot to take in there. Drew had his full takeaways in his notebook from Chris Kleiman's media availability today. So all that is going on, and that's what we'll close things out. Yes, we got confirmation from Drew Galloway. He just lost power. So that's a good way to end the show. And because, you know, about to be on full-time dad duty as well as full-time K-State duty. So the lone introduction, she did well today, going about 40 minutes strong before she got mad. The first KSO appearance for Hattie Voth. This will probably be her only time, as long as things go well and she treats me nice when her mom is at work. So that'll do it for today. Thanks for watching the KSO show. Drew and I back tomorrow. You can check out kstateonline.com and get your first week for free if you haven't tried it out yet. See everything we have going on there. And also, don't forget, Hattie, this is your first Cats to Ireland read. Take it in. See, this is how Dad's going to abandon you for a couple days next month. Visit cats2ireland.com for travel, ticket, and hospitality information to make sure you're in Dublin, Ireland for the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic that kicks off on August 23rd, 2025, 11 a.m. Central stateside. But you shouldn't be worrying about what time it is in the States. You should be in Ireland watching the Cats and Clones. It kicks off at 5 p.m. over there. So for Drew Galloway, who is without power right now, I'm Mason Both. Thanks for watching and listening to K-State Online.